Welcome, everyone, to the Locked On Cavs podcast. I'm Chris Manning. That's Evan Damrell. On today's show, we're going to look at teams that have had success leveling up via the draft. We're going to talk about the Hawks in Segment 1, the Celtics in Segment 2, and the Memphis Grizzlies in Segment 3, and try to take some of what has worked for them and see if it is applicable to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Let's get into it.
You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
All right, a couple of housekeeping notes. First, I want to thank you for making Locked On Cavs your first listen every day. Remember, we are free and available wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Chris Manning. I cover the Cavs and the NBA for places like Diamond Up Rocks and SB Nation for the Sword. My co-pilot here is Evan Damrell, the proprietor, the head man over at Facebook's where it's on Euclid. We're changing a couple of things. The music you're on the way in, at least in audio form still, is from our friends at Astor Radio. So check them out on Spotify or Apple Music. We're also changing how we're recording video. The hope is that the quality of the video, the quality of the audio in said video, is going to look better. It's a little more work. This is the first video. This is really our pilot run of how this is going to work. We're going to try it out. Hopefully it works. And if not, we'll go back to the other way and we'll just keep plugging along and figuring stuff out. But we're hoping this is going to work. I'm pretty excited about it. Evan, before we get into today's teams, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
I'm stoked to the max about this new template because after some slight adjustments, I don't look like I'm from My Chemical Romance, but I'm okay, man. This is I'm recording from the void just because it's the middle of the day, so natural lighting is always good for my pale complexion. But this is the last episode in this area, so new office setup coming soon. Kind of sad. It's the end of an era, but the beginning of a new one. But I'm all right. It's Friday. Hope you got me something good for Father's Day as your stepdad.
But I didn't get you anything.
Yeah. How are you?
I got my real dad actual gifts, but that's.
Well.
Maybe. Okay, so let's talk about the first team we're going to touch on today. That is the Atlanta Hawks. Evan, this is why I threw them in here, because I try to first pick teams that haven't.
I think all three teams you picked are all good examples, but they're unique situations.
Yes, and I was trying to pick teams that didn't have like older stars that have kind of leveled up with younger talent, a la what the Cavs and their situation is in. Like, there's a team that's in my honorable mention, or two teams really in the honorable mention, that I think we could have talked about, being the Clippers and the Suns, but they work a little differently because, like, the Clippers have Paul George and Kawhi, and then Steve Ballmer spends a unlimited amount of money. The Suns' ascent is not really so much about – it's about DeAndre Ayton and Devin Booker continuing to be awesome, but it's also they went on and got Chris Paul in addition to getting Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges and whatnot. The Hawks, to me, were the first team to start with for a couple of reasons. Number one, they get Trae Young in 2018, so it's a similar timeline to where the Cavs have sort of ended up at. They get Kevin Huerter in that same draft. They get Cam Reddish in the next year. They get Onyeka Okongwu the next year. And then last year, they took Jalen Johnson in the first and took Sharif Cooper in the second, signed him to a two-way deal. They also got DeAndre Hunter, who they got on draft night via trade. They obviously could have got Luka, but they went with Trae, and that other pick became Cam Reddish, who is now a Nick. Huerter is on an extension now. Trae Young is on one. The latest reporting out there suggests that Hunter is going to be a priority for an extension for them this summer. Okongwu is not a starter, but was really good last year and really kind of took a big step up in how he's playing as a center in this league. They've also went out and spent on older guys like Gallo and Bogdanovich, but they've really worked hand in hand with the guys they've drafted to try to find guys that support what Trae is and what Trae does. And Evan, when I look at this, it feels clear to me that they have really tried to balance supporting Trae and balancing spending to win with him versus not overextending themselves into compromising positions and contracts they don't want to have their hands on. And I think as Cleveland looks forward, with the money coming for Darius Garland, with Colin Sexton, you know, with the Evan Mobley extension down the line and everything, like, they are going to face some of the similar, okay, we got the really good young guys, now we have to juggle this other stuff kind of reality. And I think how Atlanta has succeeded and not succeeded, took a big step forward, took a big step back last year, even though they beat the Cavs in the play-in tournament, didn't go as far in the playoffs. there's something to, I think, look at that and say, okay, how can we, what can we learn from this? What can we not learn from this?
I think they're an interesting case study, the Hawks, because you have a little bit of column A, column B, obviously. We're like, yes, they're overwhelmingly loaded with young talent, like you said. But unfortunately, the issue for some of these teams, and that's why I'm like kind of fascinated with how Memphis is going to navigate this, which who we'll talk about in a bit, because they have Ja, they have Triple J, they have a lot of money on the books, and they got to figure out how to pay all these players and retain as much young talent as possible. And you look at a team like Atlanta, they're kind of facing the, maybe not the consequences of their actions, but just like the outcome of how they built this team out a little bit and how they kind of maybe accelerated the rebuild a little bit by going out and getting some of the older stars, whether it's Capella is a little younger, but he's paid at this point. So you get Capella, you get Bogdanovich, you get others as well. And then you kind of just realize like, shit, we still have to pay Cam Reddish. They have to pay Kevin Huerter. They have to pay, obviously pay Trae Young, the Supermax, and they have to like pay all these players, and they have to kind of say like, okay, we have to either sign them to an extension that's agreeable for us or trade them. And that's what you saw with Cam Reddish, where they got a pretty underwhelming return from the Knicks for him. And it just like, at least for what he was for the Hawks. And then now that he like just didn't play for the Knicks at all, it's just an interesting situation in general there too. But I, the Cavs can learn from this, or just like you said, like Darius Garland is likely going to sign like a max extension, and that'll kick in not this upcoming season but the following season. And then Isaac Okoro is extension eligible. You might be signing Colin Sexton to a deal. Evan Mobley's probably going to be your other like max candidate. So those are your 2 5-year max guys on your payroll that you're allowed to have. And then you have Jared Allen's money. He could get another extension in the like towards the end of his contract too, because we'll be entering year 3 of his, or well, there'll be 3 years remaining on his extension as we enter. There's a, no, he signed a 5-year deal. So 4 years remaining on his extension as we enter next season. So, like, you have to, it's a balancing act. And it's tough because when a team, I guess, becomes too good too quickly, you then realize, like, shit, we have to pay a lot of these young guys because you don't have the added luxury of, like, a new TV. Like, yes, the Cavs do have, like, a TV.
Every NBA team is going to get some TV.
But they're not. Yeah, every NBA team is going to get a slight, like, cushion in their payroll, but that doesn't alleviate any of the pressure and the strain the Cavs may face financially. And unless your name is Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, or Jared Allen, that probably means, like, because, like, Bill talked about this when we had him on the show, like, even if Colin Sexton signs a deal with the Cavs on RFA, it doesn't mean he's right. going to see the entirety of that contract out with Cleveland. He could very well be traded. And the same could happen to Isaac Okoro. The Cavs could flip him, and maybe if, like, a team's willing to buy high on him and sign him to more money than he's probably, the Cavs are maybe willing to pay. And then it's tough. It's tricky. It's awkward. You see a little bit of it in the past, like when Tristan Thompson's extension talks kind of broke down with Cleveland and he ended up signing with Boston. Like, there's going to be a limit to the Cavs are willing to pay for some of these role players and maybe high upside players that support your, like, main cast. And that's where it just gets tricky. And that's where, like, Atlanta's fascinating. I think Memphis is going to be interesting navigating this, too. And then
Boston kind of has it figured out. So Atlanta, the other thing they're interested about is they are tying in contracts at a time when you can, they will have decisions to make, like, right? Like, Clint Capella will be a UFA. He's a UFA after next season.
Yeah, that's,
he'll be 29. Do you have your hip replacement in hand in Okongwu? He's a different kind of player, but do you move on from the 29-year-old, or do you kind of try to manage that as a thing going forward? You have Gallo.
Well, that's kind of why they're going Rudy Gobert.
But then they also have in the summer, you have Gallo on $5 million non-guaranteed. They have that kind of escape hatch, but, you know, they could keep him for another year, use him as an expiring, whatever you want to do. They're building in some flexibility, and they're also not paying some of these guys at a point where some of your young guys, like, you can see when the rollover and changeover is going to happen, and, like, this year is almost a bridger to some degree. Like, DeLon Wright's future with the team, talking to Brad Rowland about this from Lockdown Hawks, it's like, okay, are they going to be a luxury tax team to keep him and maximize next year, or do they kind of punt on it a little bit and try to, like, set up for after that once things kind of can reset to some degree? Like, Bogdanovich is only signed through 2024, and they know the Huerter contract is a little longer, a DeAndre Hunter contract would be longer. Then it's also clear that they've put guys in the G League, and it's like they, you know, Sharif Cooper, we'll see how he turns out, but like he was a two-way guy, and there were some people that thought he might have been a first-round pick at a time last year. Jalen Johnson, who they took, you know, spent a bunch of time in the G League. Like, they have irons in the fire as they're kind of spending on this stuff, and I think that's the way you kind of have to do it. I think if you're them and you're Cleveland's looking at this and saying, okay, we're not going to have unlimited money, we have to have contingency plans for this 2 years from now. And that's not always easy to manage. The squad building is really hard to do in the NBA. But I think they're an example of like how you have to at least try to do it. And that can get really complicated. I think that's baked into what we're seeing with Atlanta. But I think it's part of what you have to do if you're in a market like Cleveland, a market like Atlanta, and are trying to do a kind of certain thing. Yeah. Evan, do you have any final Atlanta thoughts before we go into break here?
I think it's something we've been stressing for a while, but the Cleveland has at least like one legitimate second round pick, and you mentioned Sharif Cooper as like an example. It's a guy who I was high on in last year's draft, and the Cavs found a way to maybe nab him and like develop him like the Hawks did with their G League squad, and hopefully he becomes maybe your answer, because like you said, like Brad was talking about, do the Hawks want to become a luxury tax team for DeLon Wright? Well, if Sharif Cooper leveled up enough in the G League, do you feel comfortable letting him be Trae Young's backup and letting DeLon Wright walk? The Cavs kind of need avenues like that where they can get cost-controlled depth pieces, and it's something we've talked about for a while, too, and you want guys that are comfortable with the system, and I think that's something else the Cavs need to do, and they have an opportunity early-ish in the second round.
Yeah, well, it's like Nembhard from Gonzaga. Like, if they don't want to go spend big money on a backup point guard, and like they want to spend money other places or conserve money or whatever, like that's the kind of guy you could look at and say, okay, this makes some sense. All right, after the break, though, we're going to talk about the Boston Celtics, who are an organization that I think like made some mistakes along the way, and then obviously they lost in the finals last night on Thursday, but they made the finals, and like you would take that 10 out of 10 times as a season. But first, going to tell everyone about our friends at BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for your betting stats and sports info this season and all seasons, really. Find all the latest sports developments, news, odds, including the NHL Finals, Major League Baseball, and of course, all the latest fighting news from MMA to UFC and boxing. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering information, including live betting, esports, and more. For instance, if you want to bet on a specific draft prospect and where they'll be drafted, you can do that. Dyson Daniels, for instance, is -130 to be picked over 7.5, so later than 7.5, versus -110 and be picked before 7.5. Johnny Davis, another possible Cavalier, is -130 to be picked over 11.5, and a -110 favorite in his odds to be picked under 11.5. And Malachi Branham, another possible Cav here, here's a theme, is over 14.5, is at -120, and is also -120 for under 4.5, so even odds there for Branham. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. BetOnline, that's where the game starts. All right, back with you here on the Locked On Cavs podcast. So, Evan, the weird thing about the Boston Celtics is that obviously a lot did not go to plan. And this is why I think they're interesting to talk about. They got the Jays, right? They tried the Kyrie Irving thing, tried the Anthony Davis hunt, didn't work out. The Isaiah Thomas era ended how it did, and they pivoted to Kyrie. Then they tried Kemba Walker. That didn't work out. They had Horford, then brought him back via trading Kemba Walker's contract to the Thunder. They've had different coaches. But really, they have figured stuff out as they've gone along, in part because they got the two really good young guys in Tatum and Brown, who are still very young, let us remember. They get Robert Williams in 2018, and they let him kind of grow and season, and they get Grant Williams in 2019. You could say Peyton Pritchard, it's to some degree, from the 2020 class helped as well, although I think definitely not as much. And look, there's still some misses in that. Romeo Langford at 14 in 2019. Aaron Nesmith so far based on 2020. They traded away Desmond Bane for a future pick, which has not aged well.
That's a big miss. I was going to say the Romeo Langford one got them Derek White.
Yeah, so but it's like also like you missed Desmond Bane, which is tough. But they've hit on a... Yeah.
Yeah, that one's look, tough.
They have like, hit more than they've not, arguably. There's lots of bite to the apple. I think I look at them and say, okay, you get the young guys. That's the hardest part. You did that. From there, I think it's picks matter. I think it's, you know, I can't speak to all of this in terms of its seriousness internally, They've put some real lip service, though, in terms of their G League, the main Red Claws mattering to them. My point is that, like, this all matters, and this is hard, and this can take, like, longer than you think it might. Just because, like, these, you get really good young guys. Like, a Tatum is a top 5-7 guy. Like, he's that good. Brown's really, really good. It takes time. It takes luck. And, like, it sometimes it's just going to play out differently, like, and not in a linear fashion. I think that's worth remembering as we look ahead to where the Cavs are going.
No, it definitely is worth remembering and just, like, keeping in mind. Because I think a lot of... There's a lot of Cavs fans who maintain the mentality, at least I kind of had it at first when LeBron first left, where you just completely tear this thing down and you, like, trade Kevin Love, you trade Tristan Thompson, you trade, like, pretty much every veteran and every key piece, and the Cavs did offload some of that. They got rid of George Hill, they got rid of Kyle Korver, they exiled J.R. Smith, more or less. So, like, they acquired assets because the chest was barren after LeBron first left. And a lot of people have that mentality. They're like, well, you need as many bites of the apple as possible. You need to grab as many young guys as possible. And I think Boston is an interesting way to navigate it. Because, yes, like you said, there were some misses. But there are a lot of hits. I think hitting on Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown like that, and like that being like your star duo. And then like having Marcus Smart as well, just being like your culture guy. And just kind of maybe being like the third banana in your big three as well. Definitely helps too. And then you've really put together a really nice supporting cast. But I think having the foresight, if you're Brad Stevens, to realize, like, hey, maybe I just can't figure this out. Maybe I don't know what it takes to get us over the hump. Because him stepping down and more or less becoming the just running the show in the front office for the Celtics, and then hiring Ime Udoka as just a new voice to coach things, was like the smartest move the Celtics made, because the Celtics were a top team defensively. They were a top team offensively.
Historically good defense for the end stretch of the season. Like, historically good defense.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, they're legitimately balanced on both ends, and like historically good, like Chris said. And they're so young and overwhelmingly talented. And this was in Udoka's first year as coach. He kind of, because the playoffs are a different beast, has learned, maybe besides being an assistant under Popovich, like what it takes to get to the NBA Finals. Now that he knows what to do running a program, he can kind of figure it out more. This is setting Boston up really nicely, and I think having the foresight to do that was one of the biggest steps as of late for the Celtics. But like you said, kind of just not being a team who completely tears it down, I think having just the overwhelming overabundance of picks from the Kevin Garnett trade and the Paul Pierce trade to Brooklyn certainly helped a lot too. I think he's having all those bites of the apple helps a lot too, but maintaining like some level of relevancy as you try to remain competitive, and then you just try to keep plugging and playing and finding the pieces at work, have helped a lot. And like, I mean, I think turning Al Horford around and maybe making him not like such an albatross contract after just how things went in Philadelphia, and then how he just kind of vanished from the ether in Oklahoma City, helped a lot too. It's just being opportunistic and making the right moves at the right time and maybe get a guy who will push you over the edge. Mm-hmm. And I think Derek White's a lot of that too. Mirren Fader's piece on the Derek White trade and how like he was hurt San Antonio didn't want him, but then like you could clearly see from the Boston side of things, like the Celtics, especially Udoka, who coached him in San Antonio, like really vouched to get him. Like making those moves and pulling the trigger at the right time to get those connector pieces, as you say, Chris, is also key too. And I think that's also just another thing where, like, again, if you are Garland, Allen, or Mobley, you're safe. But if you're any of these other guys, you could be used in a trade to go get one of those players that if the Cavs believe this is a dude that can take us from where we're at to where we need to be, that's where you're at. And I think Boston's a good example of that, because you can grow these guys on your rookie scale contracts and have them be contributing pieces, especially Grant Williams and Robert Williams. But having the foresight to, like you say, okay, the Romeo Langford trade was the acquisition of Romeo Langford was a bust, and they were able to flip him into a very positive role player in Derek White. Like, that's a win. And, like, I think having that foresight and wherewithal and just having your finger on the pulse of your team is a really good thing to have if you're an executive or just an organization in general.
Yeah, well, I think even, like, kind of beyond that, it's like, look at them, the way they've drafted. It's like they got the two guys that they know form their identity. I think this is where it's illustrative to me. The Cavs have the guys that are forming their identity. They have Darius Garland. They have Evan Mobley. They have Jared Allen. Like, they have the base structure in place, and it's okay. Yeah. We need a guy like Grant. We believe the league is going this way. We need a center. They didn't. They took. They didn't like spend a ton of capital, and like Robert Williams' contract is you know, he was awesome this year, and his number is lower than what Jared Allen's is. Like, they have that, that's like just going to look like a really good deal as that goes forward, and look how impactful he was when he was fully healthy, right? Like, the structure there makes so much sense. The other part of it is that, like, there is, like, this can go wrong. Like, the Cavs actually have had a version of this, I think, go slightly wrong. Look at the year they take Garland, Dylan Windler, and Kevin Porter Jr. You look at that draft class. This can just not work, right? Like, and you can, the process can go a certain way, and it just sometimes doesn't work for whatever reason. That draft class, you look at it, and you say, okay, we got Darius Garland. That's our top high-end talent. We look at Dylan Windler. This is the kind of wing we think we need in the NBA to fit our roster and provide us something. It hasn't really worked out. It just hasn't. And maybe he has a great year next year, whatever. It just hasn't worked out.
No.
Kevin Porter Jr. showed so many flashes to a point where, like, his ceiling looked really, really high. It is obviously a lot of things have changed, and that is not really the case anymore. And what he's going to be in Houston is probably a little bit unclear, right? There's just, like, a lot that can happen in context matters, and how things just play out in front of you matter. But, like, the process, I think if you trust overall that, like, your process will win out and you have one around those guys, that's why, like, I think this draft, Evan, is so interesting from this perspective for Cleveland. It's like, mm-hmm. I think when we see what Kobe Altman and his team does at 14 and then at 39 and then maybe with that second round pick, or if they move up or whatever, like, what kinds of players they take at this specific moment, I think will be really illustrative, because I think you could look at this and say this is their version of – what the other team, like Boston, for instance, has done to supplement their two stars and try to and develop and get a guy that's maybe not going to help right away, but a year from now can help you take the next step. I think about them as, like, in that spot where, like, the ceiling is so high because you have these young superstars. Where does it go from here? How does the draft? Do you draft the right thing and develop that guy in the right way to help you get there? Okay. After the break, we're going to go to the Memphis Grizzlies, so stay tuned for more Locked On Cavs. Okay, last Locked On Cavs segment of the day. I'm Chris Manning. That's Evan Demerl. Evan, the Grizzlies, I think, are probably the darling in the space of building through the draft in recent years. Would you say that's fair?
Oh, no, absolutely. I think they are, like, draft Twitter nerds, NBA analytics fans. Like, they are the amalgamation of just, like, people that are a little too online when it comes to the team building process. But they're fun. They're a fun team. I've always said I envy their situation just because of the overwhelming overabundance of young talent they have. And I'm just, again, fascinated to see how they navigate this, because you're starting to see some of the cracks and some of the issues with having to pay a lot of your top-end talent that are under rookie skill contracts, all while your complementary and supplementary connector pieces and role players are also becoming contract extension eligible. Now you have to kind of navigate this and try and keep as much of this as you can, or maybe supplant this and find replacements through other avenues. And just with how well Memphis is drafted and how well they develop talent, I feel comfortable in saying that I think they'll be all right if they lose, like, a player or two or three this offseason because of just how expensive
the payroll thing is a question. But let's just look at how they've added guys and where that sets them up, because there will be a pivot, but the Cavs will face a pivot. Like, that's just how that's the nature of team building in sports, right? They get John Morant in 2019. That is obviously the catalyst that makes it all go. But they also get Desmond Bane via that trade, and he's been incredible for them, right? They get Jaren Jackson Jr. the year before, and he's really good. They get De'Anthony Melton, who, like, doesn't play as much as you would think for how good he is. But, like, they got him for a future second after he didn't really play for Phoenix. And, like, signed him to a pretty reasonable extension. And, like, he's just, like, a depth piece they have. And maybe he's, like, gettable for another team. But, like, that's, like, a good player that they went and found and has had some really good moments. They've grabbed Brandon Clark and Xavier Tillman. They've kept looking to add future picks, like, via the Jonas Valanciunas trade, right? Like, they added Zaire Williams last year, and he saw some minutes in the playoffs. I think that there's obviously going to be a point, and they benefit from not being there yet, where, like, you have to put your foot in the ground and say, okay, we're just going to go. Like, this is going to be our all-in moment. This is going to be the moment we put our 2 feet in the sand and we push and we dig our heels in and we try to maximize what exactly this is. I think they're a reminder that, like, as exciting as it can seem if you're a Cavs fan, let's say, to look at last year and say, okay, it's time, let's go. It's never – you got to, like, just sometimes be a little more patient than that and just put your heel and just be willing to be flexible.
Yeah.
Look for future flexibility and give yourself time to let this actually grow in a way that actually will help you get somewhere. Because I think if you put your feet in too early and say, hey, we're just going to go for it right now, you can burn yourself out before you're ready. I think if there might be something I'm missing here. I think a lot of like the Anthony Davis Pelicans is a team that like just was trading stuff to try to maximize Anthony Davis, and I get it, but it didn't actually lead to anything. It just was moving chairs around on the ship mm-hmm. that was already sinking, right? The Grizzlies are like a ship that is humming along, and like they know that there's going to be a time where like some people are going to get off and things will get more expensive, but they're like sailing towards a specific moment in a way that makes sense.
Yeah, I'll fully admit I was wrong when it comes to Memphis not maximizing their assets, because I was banging my fist on the table last year saying, like, listen, you have Ja Morant, you have Jaren Jackson Jr., you have a, like, I'm a huge Brandon Clark fan. Like, you have Brandon Clark, who was phenomenal in his rookie season. Like, and then I raised an eyebrow when they traded for Steven Adams and they got more draft picks. I'm just like, why are you doing this? This doesn't make any sense. But clearly, there's a reason why I'm podcasting and not working in the NBA front office. That's the first thing. But second of all, like, the Grizzlies are set up really nicely where, like Chris said, even if guys have to get off the ship at some point, they'll maintain this pace and cadence they're at because they have their guy in Ja Morant. They have their co-star in Jaren Jackson Jr. They have D'Anthony Melton. They have Brandon Clark. They have Xavier Tillman. And like, a lot of these guys may step off and sign with other teams or be traded, but they have all these future picks down the line. They're not Oklahoma City with like just so many more picks than they ever need, but they have enough where they can supplant that young talent. And maybe if they're in a different position as well, they can finally make that move, like Chris said, where they're maintaining patience, but like, with the opportunity comes along where like they can go get a huge difference maker that'll just completely push them over the top. And the Grizzlies are really freaking good already, so like, they're in a good space to begin with. So that opportunity could be coming sooner instead of later if something does just go awry in the league. But they're in an interesting spot where even if they do lose a player or two because they can't afford it, they're able to supplant it to an extent because they have so many draft picks that they can always go out and either go trade for a player that they could use to alleviate the loss of a different player, or just draft them with their draft picks too. Like, it's an interesting situation. I think the Grizzlies are kind of the new model. I know a lot of people we talk about back in the day, like the Oklahoma City model, where the Thunder were just very bad for a couple years when they first moved to OKC. Granted, they had Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook when they came there from Seattle, but they got James Harden, they got Serge Ibaka. Like, Sam Presti drafted three future MVPs, and then Serge Ibaka, who was like almost a Defensive Player of the Year candidate before his back started failing him a little bit. But it's just an interesting situation the way some teams operate. And I think the Grizzlies are going to be like the new case study if you're a non-glamour market or a smaller market team. Because let's be frank, Memphis isn't exactly like where every player is signing up, but they're young, they're fun, they're overwhelmingly loaded with depth. Like, if you were a veteran, I think they'd be a more desirable destination. And then if you like look at the Cavs, you could make a similar argument for them too, because they're winning now, and now like the expectations to make the playoffs. But Cleveland can kind of use it as like a negotiation tactic to say, like, listen, let's say your options are Detroit and Cleveland, you'd probably rather sign with Cleveland at that point for less money if you want to win. Or you can go sign for more money and play for the Pistons if your two options are two Midwest cities. But like, it's interesting stuff. And I think the Cavs can learn I always say I'm envious of Memphis's situation because they're just such a fun, over-talented team. And just the way they play is just really aesthetically pleasing to me. And so I'm fascinated to see where they go, but they are in a very good place. And I'll wholly admit I was wrong when I said they should just start offloading assets and go all in on what they have right now. I think maintaining patience and following the vision in the course is the smart move. Because they could also just they could age out the West too. Like, they could age out the Suns, the Warriors, the Lakers, the Clippers. They could be in their prime when the rest of these teams are kind of
I don't think you can like assume that some of that will like happen. You have to, I think, at a certain point, like, do make moves to get aggressive and go. I think the other part of it is like,
of course, like, you don't be patient the whole time, like, of course, but like, they have a little
also
bit of time.
Remember,
on
they
side.
Traded for Justice Winslow, and it's like, that trade hasn't affected their trajectory. That was a trade that did not work out. He is not on the team anymore. They traded a first round pick for Justice Winslow. That didn't work out, and it doesn't affect them. Like, it doesn't mean something significant in terms of where that franchise is going. And I think that is notable. Like, having, they have insulation from those mistakes. And, like, Cleveland's cap situation in some of this is, like, a little trickier than what Memphis's is. And, like, I don't think they're, unless they're going to, like, dump Kevin Love for bad money to take on picks, which I don't, doesn't really seem like a thing they're going to do. I don't really know what their kind of options are on the way. Like, this will look differently than what Memphis has done. I think it is just worth remembering that, like, you can, it's worth not, it's worth maintaining some flexibility before you absolutely have to push all the way in for no reason. Because, like, look, even, like, a team like the Warriors who just won a title, I would have been among the group that probably, maybe I'm caught up in the moment of that a little bit, right? And maybe I think about this more because of the LeBron era and how that went with Cleveland. I just look at, like, mm-hmm. how Golden State decided not to just cash in every chip possible for, like, veterans. And, like, look, maybe the, maybe this is just Curry's grade and all that stuff. And, like, that kind of wins out.
I mean, they whiffed. They,
right,
they,
but it's like they whiffed on the Wiseman pick. They Kuminga and Moody didn't, like, play meaningful minutes for them this year. And, like, they won a title. And it's like they have flexibility to go into that next era and still do that stuff. And it's, well, it's like even that, or even if they develop and, like, Kuminga's a rotation piece and you don't have to worry about trying to hold on to Otto Porter for a year longer than you should. Like, that is a way you can do this that I think is smart. It's why, like the team that I really want, like, it's there, I wanted to talk about maybe, and we're just going to say it at the end here, is, like, I think the Clippers are another team the Cavs have to look at in terms of just, like, you have more money. Like, you have lots of money. Spend the money, and you, like, I can't tell you that, like, it's going to result in this X return on Y investment, right?
But my only counterpunch to the Clippers, the money thing is true, but Ty Lue's also a good coach.
No, but I mean, like, in terms of, like, the stuff we don't see, there's, like, a lot that we just don't see. Like, I think some of the G League stuff, I think some of the player development, I think the more money you throw into that and are willing to throw into that, will get you, can help you get places. Like, the Clippers are drafting, like, they're taking second round picks and stuff, but it's like they get BJ Boston because they want him to play.
Amir Coffey and BJ
how
Boston.
How dare you not mention Jason Preston, who, like, I think they thought might have played. But he got hurt.
He didn't.
But he got hurt.
Didn't play.
But I'm saying, like, he might have played. Like, he's a guy I think they hope can play. Like, you talked to people at Summer League about him last year. It's like, okay, we drafted this guy because we need a backup point guard. Maybe this is the kind of thing we can eventually turn into something. They're taking, they're willing to crack eggs and spend the money to crack really expensive eggs to, like, see if they can make the best omelet possible. And, like,
it's true.
I think you have to do that as an organization. I just kind of think, like, if you're going to be serious, you kind of just have to maximize every resource angle you possibly can. All right, that's going to be it. I don't know if this yielded anything interesting. I think in my brain, look,
it's a fun conversation. I think it's we're setting the table for people to have some nice Father's Day chats around the grill this weekend. But, like, you know, the Cavs should build like the Memphis Grizzlies, and then when we flipping burgers, you know what? I agree, but I like the Boston Celtics avenue, and they can thank us. We're bringing families together this Father's Day weekend.
Everyone, be well. Going to be some cooler weather this weekend, but stay hydrated, be well. We'll be back on Monday. We're gearing up for the final run up into the NBA draft, so stay tuned for that. Again, this was a new video set up for us, so if it's not entirely perfect yet, I apologize. We're working on it. We're tinkering with it. We're trying to make it better for you viewers on YouTube, and please subscribe on there if you haven't already. Until next time, I'm Chris. That's Evan. Everyone, be well.